In this episode of Raising Connections, we have a conversation with Colleen Frisky Layton, founder of Friskies, a nonprofit wildlife rehabilitation center located in Howard County, accepting injured, orphaned, abandoned, or displaced wildlife. Friskies is inspected by the United States Department of Agriculture, the USDA, the Federal Fish and Wildlife Department, which ensures that facilities are clean, well-maintained, and receive proper care. What do you do if you find an injured animal in your yard or alongside the road? You can usually bring it to Friskies for rehabilitation, where the goal is to return them back to their natural home once they are well enough or old enough. Get those questions answered about how to properly transport that animal to the rescue. Welcome to Raising Connections. I'm your host, Rayshan Mayer. This is the program where we talk about your critters, companions, commerce, and agriculture, and all the connections in between. Today, as always, we have a fun and interesting guest and a ball of energy, Colleen Frisky Layton from Frisky's Wildlife Rescue.
Started when I was very young. I was pregnant with my first son and my husband was in Vietnam. So I went to night school so I could get my high school diploma. And I started off with a litter of bunnies that was found on the railroad tracks after they seen the dead mother, and they took them to a Tasty Freeze diner.
Oh my.
And they says, there's an Indian girl down the road here that knows all about animals. No, I didn't. I'm my Irish mother's daughter. I knew how to pray for them. But I figured it was my penance, because you're probably too young to remember, but they used to have what they called the rabbit test.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I killed two rabbits.
Okay.
I called my doctor a quack and said, I only did it once and didn't like it. You're a quack. And he says, I am not a quack. It only takes once. You don't have to like it. The rabbit died. And I says, well, something was wrong with the rabbit. Do the test again. And I got pregnant on my wedding night.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I'm from Washington State originally and was in Gettysburg. So when somebody brought me a litter of bunnies that they found at Tasty Freeze Diner people referred them to, I thought it was my penance. Two live, two died. I wanted to know what I did right and what I did wrong. And
makes
I'm
sense.
Telling you, when you're hungry, I mean really hungry for the knowledge, you research, you talk to everybody. And they didn't have the internet then.
Right.
And one of the first lessons I learned, besides being Hibbley and farm, and I was in foster homes, so I was in everything from dairy farms to we did hunting and trapping and all that stuff. But the first lesson I learned was from a hobo. He says he's not a tramp and he's not a bum. He's a hobo. And he told me, always remember 4 to 6 when it comes to rabbits. They have 4 to 6 litters from spring to fall. They have 4 to 6 babies with each litter. They don't leave the nest until they're 4 to 6 weeks old. And in that 4 to 6 litters that they have from spring to fall will be under the edge of a bush, at the edge of your sidewalk, underneath a little bit of your porches or the sheds. That's where you're going to find the little bunnies. The mothers, as good as they are, they only nurse them at dawn and dusk. Now, you caring for them, they have to be nursed 4 to 6 times a day. And start every mammal you get in with goat's milk. It's the most nutritious drink you can give to any mammal. Don't do whole milk. Don't do anything else. Do goat's milk. Goat's milk, as good as it is still an acquired taste.
Yes.
So when you have people that bring you in these bunnies, tell them to just remember 4 to 6. And when you let your dog out first thing in the morning or last thing in the evening, bang the door a time or two before you let the dog out, because the rabbit will hop off of her nest, and that's when they're doing their feeding at dawn and dusk. So the dog scours the yard and sees farther than you do. So you let the dog out, and the dog looks across the yard and sees these little bobbleheads, and he's going, look, a game of whack-a-mole.
Yes.
And he's got to get the baby bunnies. And somebody's got to find them or see their dog ingested one, so they're got to look for the nest, and then they're got to bring them to you when it be unnecessary. So I was one of these people that loved to run in the woods and climb trees and just check out caves. It's like we didn't have any fear. We checked out anything. We climbed trees. We seen a vine hanging. We thought we were Tarzan and Jane. I mean, I remember when I was young, I was always looking for caves, and I found a cave, and I brought out this ball of snakes that were apparently mating and told my mother that they were tied up in a knot, and I needed her to help me untangle them. You got to help me get the knots out.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
She supposedly screamed at me, so I'm afraid of snakes now. Actually, I have a real good director who's fantastic with the reptiles, so it works out good.
But you must be a very special person to have the snakes allow you to take them in a ball to get them untangled.
From what I hear, I was like 5 years old, and I was always just exploring, climbing everything. Country people, we slid on rocks, we made dams in the creeks.
How did you end up to be here in Maryland?
My house had electrical fire and it burned down in 20 minutes.
Oh, my.
And I was dating a guy that was a pilot over at the airport, and he was separated from his wife, and he got me a place here, and I ended up starting here, and he went back to his wife.
Gotcha.
Which was probably good, because he had children that were my age, and that's how I ended up in Maryland. Truthfully, I like it here. I don't like the encroaching development and the taxes. 99% of it from what we deal with the weather here and resources, I really like it here. When I came here from Washington State and I went to a hardware store to get snowshoes, nobody knew what I was talking about.
Oh, I bet.
When I was young, I messed around on the edges of the river on mountain cliffs and watched eagles and bears steal fish from each other.
Well, it sounds like you've got to be a bit frisky to keep up with all the animals there.
It's a challenge. It's a serious challenge every day, you know, because my nightmares, and I do have nightmares every night, and you have 15, 16-hour days. So you start off 5:30 in the morning, and you can't turn off the lights and stuff until about 10:30 at night. When I go to sleep, it's usually some nightmare or something going wrong that I'm out of control. But when you wake up in the morning, you're making your idiot list in your head before you even get into the shower. Well, I got to go back there and see if that little baby fox did all right its first night in an outside enclosure. And I got to go see if that raven made it okay because it's trying to perch but kept falling down. I don't want to find it on its back. And I got to remember to thaw out some more drumsticks for the eagle and the owls and the hawks and the vultures out there. And I hope I have enough packages of that. I worry about everything here. There's not an animal that doesn't go without some kind of stress and worry, because as soon as it comes in, you want to be the answer. I tell them, every person that walks up to the door, you're the lifesaver and transporter. We're the nursemaid and waitress, and we make a great team, and we're going to try to do everything we can to save its life. Now, a lot of times I have to tell you the truth, that we're going to do everything we can, but it may just be providing hospice, but it's not out there starving or suffering. And you got to remind the public, they're not wasting their time. Whether we get them to the point where we can rehabilitate them back out into the wild where they belong, and you want to do this as quickly as possible. I was talking to one of the federal fish and wildlife guys, and he was saying about some rehabilitators want to hold on to them, and I go, no, we don't want to exhibit them. We want to get them back out. We need the space, and it costs a lot to feed, and it's a responsibility and worry with each one. I'm not out there to impress anybody. We take in thousands of animals every year, and about 40% to 50% don't make it, but sometimes I'm putting something out there that's not flying perfect. And he reminded me that you could go out there and capture any wild animal anywhere, and you're going to find something wrong. It's got to have a piece of its tail missing. The hawk might have a rotator cuff problem. So you got to remind yourself, you got to do the absolute best you can. And if all possible, get it back out there. If it can lead a life that's a quality of life, that's what we're striving for.
And I would think those critters, much like people, because a lot of our listeners know about people, but they don't know about wildlife. The wildlife adapts and they move on, much like people. When they have a limb that is lost or they lose eyesight or there's something that comes along, they adapt and they go on to live a perfectly normal life.
They do, yeah. But you've got to be careful not to get in over your means. But all this is so costly and documentating. And when you're going through life, if you have any children, how much did you document?
Right.
Well, my son had the measles, I think, when he was 4 years old. What month was that? I don't remember.
Right.
But the wildlife that we get in, we got to document and take care of them and get them back out there as soon as possible. And when somebody says, how did that do? I have to be able to go back on the paperwork and say, I'm sorry to share sad news with you.
Absolutely.
That hawk did not make it through the night. It crossed over on its own, or I had to euthanize it. And sharing those sad tales with somebody is really difficult. And they go, well, I wasted my time. No, it wasn't out there starving or suffering. They're striving to live. Each life that comes in here is fighting to live, and we're just a part of its help. The satisfying release of a healthy wild animal, of course, is Frisky's goal. It's every wildlife rehabilitator's goal. You want to get it back out there as soon as possible. We all have to adjust our lives. We adjust to the price changes of our groceries and our taxes. We adjust to our children that we put so much of our life into to go out there and make the right choices and go on with our lives and hopefully be proud of the choices they make on their own. And I always tell people you need a bit of common sense and IQ to do anything with what we're living these days. We have so many people that have the IQ, the intelligence, and the money, and they need us common sense and manual labor people.
Absolutely.
But there was an old movie called Cool Hand Luke, and the warden kept saying, but what we have here is a failure to communicate.
Yes, I know that line well.
We have people that come here and do all the wrong things, and they have the best intentions, and they have no common sense, but they have the IQ level that is just impressive. But I tell them, to be here, you've got to have an imagination to solve all these problems. You got to know what is their natural behavior, and cuddling wildlife is not a good idea. And I tell people, they told somebody yesterday, I says, but they brought me some squirrels, and I says, are they all in that container? Because the woman kept clutching her jacket to her. Because I've had so many animals come here in the bosoms of of women who wanted to keep them warm.
Oh, they're lucky they don't get bit or clawed or
But internal and external parasites that can be zoonotic.
It's a big deal.
Somebody told me that you were a microbiologist, that you understand what the Balesa scaris parasite is, because you cannot see the egg with the naked eye, and it can and does live through petri dishes of peroxide or bleach.
Yes, it does.
So
it's
if scary. You wash your hands and you have it on your sleeve and you sneeze or you wipe the sniffle from your face because you're crying over this thing that needs your supportive care, you can be ingesting something that, with your stress and your health condition and immunity, well, we all have a compromised immune system anymore. You can be compromised and deal with a parasite that's going to infect your liver, kidneys, lungs, eyes, brain, and make you special as the animal that you just brought in.
Yep. And in a pretty darn quick turnaround, if I remember right off the top of my head, I think it's 2 years until symptoms are quite severe.
In 2012, I had the Balesa scaris parasite, and the albendazole about tried to take me out. And one of the better things of my life was how I was brought up. I never learned how to smoke, drink, mess with dope, curse, wear makeup, drink coffee, or bite my nails.
Okay.
So I never learned how to do hair, makeup, nails, tattoos, jewelry. I have nothing against any of it. I just never had the interest, knowledge, or the money to be mentally invested in any of it. So when I started thinking that I'm seeing some weird little marks on my stomach that were there, and then they disappeared, and they look like miniature snakes, less than an inch, sometimes less than 2 inches, you know, and they come to the surface and then appear somewhere else. And I, at first, thought I was leaning over the fences, taking care of the horses and the goats or something, and I left a mark, and I said, look at that. And then when I started coughing, my mother said, well, it's probably because of the birds that you're around, or the pollen, or, you know, just the natural dander dust that comes off of birds' feathers. You know, I work with so many different animals, from eagles to parakeets, sparrows and wrens and hummingbirds. We thought maybe it was that. And by the time I went and got all the testing between Johns Hopkins and special diet and treatments, it was a very, very scary time. And now I try to tell people, don't try to do this. All animals have internal and external parasites. You can hold a little sparrow for a moment, and if it's dying, those lice and mites are going to be up your sleeve before you know what happened. You will sit it on your warm seat and say, but I had seat warmers, so on the way over here, I drove real carefully, but I had it sitting on the seat over there and had the seat warmer on. Now your seat's infested. And you try to scare the bejesus out of everybody, too. I know you want to do the careful and not get yourself into means of needing medical attention yourself, but if you don't have gloves, put a Ziploc bag on your hand, a grocery store bag. Put it in a paper bag. Put it in something that you can bring over right away. Wrap an animal up like a burrito and put it in a box, a bag, a trash can, anything, and get it over here without handling it and trying to handle anything yourself. We have the longest hours. We have great staff, and we want to do the supportive care and the pain relief and the medication and fluids and heat ourselves. You know, we don't want to scare people off of not caring. I mean, the avian influenza is putting a scare. I've seen a bird, and it's not the kind of bird that usually comes around my bird feeder, but I'm afraid it might have a disease because it's staying there. But now everybody's worried about the avian influenza. Nobody wants to touch an animal. You know, they see it, and they're a little overcautious, so it's hard to find a middle ground for people to realize that just do your precautions and believe in soap and water. The sunshine tends to invigorate these guys to no end, any of the parasites that are out there. That's another challenge I guess we all have to deal with, whether you're a rehabilitator or not.
So when you talked about your bird feeder and you said you had somebody visiting that normally doesn't visit, does that mean it wasn't one of your normal birds? It wasn't a normal type?
Yeah, it was like a hawk or the crows. You remember everybody was afraid of the West Nile virus.
Absolutely.
And a crow comes around and steals the food. And crows are called murders. They come by and they scare off everything else. Crows will chase a gray horned owl. They chase eagles when we release them.
Oh my.
And if they see a crow out there or a raven, I mean, we got one in last night. I told them just put a pillowcase over top of it and then put the pillowcase in a bag and bring it over. It'll be fine and I'll take care of it when it gets here. And it had a rotator cuff. They tried to chase it away from their bird feeder and it ended up getting hit by a car, sideswiped by a car that was just passing by in this cul-de-sac area. And they says, well, the car wasn't moving very fast. They says, but I don't want to touch anything. People, they want to do the right thing, but they also, like we said, you got to have common sense and IQ, and that combination, you know, we just got to be able to communicate with each other.
When we come back, we'll continue talking with Colleen about all of her adventures at Frisky's Wildlife.